You are listening to Alternative Perspectives on WRFG 89.3 Atlanta. Welcome to the show. This is your host, Greg Bossen. This is the only radio hour exclusively devoted to the queer community, and I am very happy that you are listening. I've been gone for a couple of weeks, and now I am back, but thank you so much for listening. The opinions expressed here are those of myself and my guests and do not necessarily represent the views of WRFG, its employees, board, volunteers, funders, or listeners. So they don't necessarily represent those views, but as I had said many times, I'm always correct, so they probably agree with whatever it is that I'm saying. So tonight's topic, according to UCLA's the Williams Institute School of Law, there were an estimated 114,000 same-sex couples that are raising adopted or foster children in the U.S. So that's 114,000. That's a lot. I would think it would be higher, but this was in 2010. As society becomes more accepting of those in the queer community, and we become more accepting of ourselves, it's safe to assume that these numbers will continue to grow. On tonight's show, we will be discussing how gay adoptions work here in Georgia. And we have a couple who's in the process of an adoption, as well as an adoption caseworker to help us with the specifics. How do you start the process? What are the pitfalls? What's the cost? How long does it take? So questions like this. But before we dive in to that,
news of the queer.
I know that's right.
Oh no, she didn't say what.
All right, so that's my personal favorite thing to do. All right, so so we're going to do news. We're going to start locally. We're going to work our way out just like we normally do. So this first piece of news is locally, and this is on May 7th. And if you aren't aware of this, you need to be. Not necessarily queer related, but I still think it's really important for those of us in the progressive community. There are five production companies so far that have announced they will not film in the state of Georgia over our controversial new abortion law. So on this was last Tuesday, May 7th, Governor Brian Kemp signed into law one of the most restrictive abortion bills in the United States, the so-called heartbeat bill. And these bills are happening across the country. I think there's 13 states that have them. Boy, doesn't it sound like I know what I'm talking about? But anyway, the heartbeat bill will ban abortion after doctors can detect a fetal heartbeat. This usually occurs around 6 weeks into the pregnancy, before many women even know they are pregnant. The new law is set to go in effect in January of 2020. So I'm assuming that you know about this, but at this point now, it renders abortion almost illegal in this state because many women don't know that they're pregnant until after you can hear a heartbeat. And so as a result of that, we're starting to lose money. So just to let you know, David Simon, well, first of all, Killer Films is one of them that's leaving. A production company is leaving. David Simon, the creator of The Wire and The Deuce, who runs Blown Deadline Productions, is also planning on leaving. And these are just a couple. I'm assuming these numbers are going to grow. Last year, just so that you know the impact of this, there were 455 productions made here in the state of Georgia, which led to about $2.7 billion in direct spending in the state. For those people that only care about money, there's a reason not to have this law as well, beyond the fact that you're basically forcing a woman you're telling her what to do with her body, which I definitely have a problem with. So we're not good with that. Moving nationally, here's a bit of good news. This happened on May 7th in California. It's interesting. The what happens in California is usually good. What happens in Georgia, not so much. But the faculty at California Polytechnic State University in San Luis Obispo, I'm quite sure that I've mispronounced that, have voted to remove Chick-fil-A from their campus. So Cal Poly's Academic Senate, the governing body for the university's faculty, held a vote on Tuesday, May 7th, about the status of the Chick-fil-A location, and they voted overwhelmingly in favor of removing the controversial restaurant. So, look, I like Chick-fil-A, okay? I do, and you probably do as well, but they apparently are still funding LGBT, anti-LGBT organizations. And so clapping? I don't know. What am I trying to say? You should never know what you're not going to say. You should know if you're on the radio. Anyway, but congratulations. I'll say that. Goes out to them. So I'm glad for that. So moving into international. So this one isn't so nice. Now, a couple of months ago, we did a gay trip around the world where we looked at a country in pretty much every area of the world and said, you know, is it good to be gay here? Is it bad to be gay here? And one of them in Africa, I picked Ghana. So Ghana is not exactly a great place to be gay. It's illegal there. As a matter of fact, the punishment is death. Which is quite permanent. But that I talked about before. This is a research study that I came across. Now, the study was done in 2017, but it found that 87% of the population of Ghana says that they are against allowing LGBT and I persons holding public meetings to discuss issues. So they are 87% of the population doesn't think that the queer community should be able to meet. And let's see, what else here? 13% will physically or verbally abuse a queer person and to make them hide their identity. And 45% of the population agrees to socially shun anybody who is gay. More than 75% of the residents of Ghana applaud homophobic statements by state officials. And let me see. And what else do we have here in this good news? 36% of the residents of Ghana believe that queer people should be discriminated against. And more than half, 54%, of Ghanaians, I guess that's how you would say it, say expelling students believed to be queer should be promoted. So I just found that really depressing and really shocking that we've still, in this day and age, we've still got people that feel this way. So I thought that it was important to let you know about it, although it is, of course, sad. And then, now here we'll have a bit of good news. This is on the international front. This was in Britain, in Lancashire, I believe is correct, the correct way of saying it. Foster parents, and this kind of has to do with what we're talking about, but foster parents accused of turning kids transgender were exonerated in court last Friday. So that's May 10th. So what we're talking about here, and I'll just give you the specifics here because it's kind of interesting. British foster parents, named CP and TP to protect their children's identities, took in young people struggling with their gender identity. Their own child is transgender. Their daughter is at 7 years of age, was receiving support and love and care from the two parents. She's now 13 and she's thriving. So she is prospering now. So following this, so after they raised their transgender child, they decided that they were going to foster children that were struggling with gender identity. One child at 3 years old was taken to school dressed in a girl's uniform. The teacher expressly asked the foster couple to put the child in boys' clothing and reported it to social services. And what ultimately happened is that the Lancashire County Council wanted all five children who were living with the couple to be taken away from them. Two of them are biological and three are foster. But fortunately, last week, the high court judge now exonerated the couple who just wants to be good parents to trans kids struggling with their identity. Justice Williams, according to The Times, and this is The Times in Britain, says the evidence from almost all sources of how the children are prospering in the care of CP and TP, those are the foster parents, provides very powerful support to the contention that they are good parents. So the couple have been fostering caregivers for 16 years. So I think that that's good news. Happy about that. And one more little thing, and this is the time when I used to, I like to say something just for fun. I don't know how fun this is, but I'll start with something not so fun. Doris Day passed away yesterday at the young age of 97. I have no idea what she passed from, but at 97, I don't know that it matters. But anyway, I thought I would end with some fun facts. First of all, Doris Day was named after a song. How fitting that a pop idol with 21 Billboard top 10 hits would be named for a song. Born Doris Mary Ann Kappelhoff, the young singer earned her shorter, sunnier stage name from bandleader Barney Rapp, who dug her take on the song day after day. So he started calling her Doris Day. So that's where it came from. The next thing is she refused to sing the song Que Sera Sera, did not like it. Alfred Hitchcock, we can thank for this song. The immortal song was written for the director's 1956 thriller, The Man Who Knew Too Much, which cast Day opposite Jimmy Stewart. Day initially refused to sing the number, deeming it a children's song. Under studio pressure, she reportedly did it in one take and said, "That's the last time you will ever hear me sing this song." So much for that. So, que sera, sera, I guess. So I think that's probably good enough. And so we are, you are listening, you are listening to Alternative Perspectives again, Atlanta's only radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting the queer community. And we will be right back after this quick break.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, "What will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich?" Here's what she said to me. Que sera, sera, whatever will be, the future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera.
And now a message from our Public Affairs Bulletin Board. Georgia DeKalb County Jail is in the middle of a human rights crisis. In early April 2019, inmates made signs that said, "Please help, we dying," to stand up against unlivable conditions, from mold in the food and on the walls to abuse by guards. Their small act was met with brutal retaliation from the guards. They were beaten and thrown in solitary. Families of inmates have been frantically trying to get a hold of their sons inside to confirm they are alive and receiving medical treatment. There will be an emergency protest on Wednesday, May 15th at 6:30 p.m., starting at the Kensington MARTA station. For more information, facebook.com/IWOCATL.
And we are back. This is WRFG, Atlanta 89.3 FM. Welcome back to Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only queer radio hour. I am your host, Greg Bossen. So tonight's show is about gay adoption. I'm going to do just a quick little history lesson on it. So before the 1970s, homosexuality was rarely discussed and even illegal. So the idea of gay parents being able to adopt children was, well, that just wasn't going to happen. So in the 1970s and the 1980s, as gay rights started to become front and center and we started fighting for our rights, it became more of a possibility. However, many state agencies who didn't want to didn't want to give kids to gay parents adoption agencies, they basically would say, well, you know what, unless you're married, you can't have a kid. And you can't get married, so therefore, I guess you can't get a kid. Well, in 2015, the Supreme Court ruled, hopefully that you know, that now it is legal for same-sex couples to get married. So that removed that that option. So you couldn't hide under that because gay couples can get married. So even after that, there were some states that still tried to do something to avoid. I'm trying to see where this is. Yeah, in like Mississippi, they still had a law banning adoption to same-sex couples, regardless of whether or not they were married. But a federal judge in 2016 struck down that law, and that federal decision, that just removed the last obstruction. So today, thanks to these federal rulings, same-sex couples have the right to adopt either married or individually, and it is protected throughout the entire United States. And while the history of same-sex adoption has come a long way, there are still obstacles for LGBT would-be parents, like a religious freedom bill that would allow faith-based organizations to discriminate. So despite these challenges, though, the queer community is now more than ever turning to adoption, and it's becoming a normal and beautiful way to create a family. So with us to discuss the ins and outs of adoption for gay individuals and couples, we have three guests. We have Vincent Scriba, and first of all, let me just make sure, and his partner, Todd Smith, who have been together, I believe, 15 years. Why don't you say hello, Vincent? Let me make sure that I can hear you.
Okay. Hey, Greg.
And I would say Vinny, right? I'm going to call you Vinny.
Go for it.
Okay, cool. And remember, speak up and right into the camera, to the microphone. All right. And then Todd is his partner, and that is his real name, Todd Smith. I know it sounds made up, but it is not a nom de plume. It's his real name. Say hello, Todd.
Hi, Todd.
Yeah, see, that's perfect. I like that. All right. So Vinny and Todd have been together for 15 years. Is that right?
Yep.
All right, cool. And they are in the process of going through an adoption. Now, the adoption is not final yet, so we won't be saying the name of the child. But suffice it to say, they've been going through this. How long have you been going through the adoption process, actually?
About 3.5 years.
So it does take a while, for sure. So that's one thing that's important to realize. Now, along with Vinny and Todd, we have Jalen Bowen. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, a little bit closer to the mic.
You hear me now?
Yeah, yeah. And you can move the mic closer to your mouth. We're all just chill here. Don't worry about it. It's fine. All right. So there we go. Yeah, we want everybody to be comfortable and have a good time. So Jalen Bowen is an adoption coordinator. She's presently working with Families First, one of the few adoption agencies in Atlanta that is friendly to the queer community. So I wanted to start by talking with you, Jalen, just a little bit about, well, first of all, how long have you been in this line of work? I know you've been with Families First for just a year now, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And what were you doing before?
Well, I've been working in child welfare for right around 5 years. I used to work for an agency called Wendy's Wonderful Kids, which does adoption recruitment. And then after that, I was working with the state for Division of Family and Children's Services. I did some work in CPS and then some work in foster care.
What's CPS?
Oh, Child Protective Services.
Okay.
Sorry
All
about
right.
that.
No
so,
worries.
So I did some work there, moved over to foster care, but adoption has always been what I've liked most, and luckily I was able to have that opportunity again.
All right. Okay. Yeah. No, I would think it would be very fulfilling to be able to connect a kid with a parent like that. So I wanted to start also with a little bit of statistics. And I mean, I've been talking to Jalen. It's a little hard to get statistics about this, but what you got for us? Well, there's your, you know what I can say nationally, I think it was in 2016, we said there was about 115 or 116,000 kids in foster care. Is that right? Or not in being adopted. Is that right?
I do not claim to be an expert, so I do not know if that number is correct or not.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little weird. So this is, again, from, and I said this at the beginning of the show, from UCLA, that there's an estimated 100 and. Well, there's actually a little over 500,000 same-sex couples that are raising either adopted children or foster children in the U.S. is what we're looking at. And that was as of a couple of years ago. I think that number has gone up. Now, for Families First, you did take a look. So
yes.
Tell me, this is kind of a shocking statistic. So first of all, tell me what Families First does.
Well, Families First does a lot of things, mm-hmm. but you know, specifically what I'm most familiar with is adoption. Mm-hmm. So we have three forms of adoption. We do international, domestic, infant, as well as special needs, which is what I'm a part of. And mm-hmm. I do want to clarify.
Before you do that, okay. though, so international would be if you're adopting a child from another country,
yes.
period. Domestically, if it's an infant. So this is when the potential parent comes and says, I would like to adopt a newborn.
Yes.
Okay, and please connect me and walk me through that process.
And we do, mm-hmm. our infant placement is open.
Ah, okay. All right, so you do infant placement.
Yes.
Okay, and then the third option is, you're calling it special needs.
Special
needs. So let's dispel the myth about special needs and what that means.
Okay. So special needs in this format, it basically just means that a child has been in care for 2 or more years, they are a part of a sibling group, and it is possible that they may have some type of diagnosis, whether that be physical or mental, but that could be, it could be something more extreme, but it could be something as small as ADHD as a diagnosis. And I know people get a little scared when we just say special needs because they're not really clear on what that means, but truly the most simplest way to look at it is you're adopting children from foster care.
Right. So these are children that have been, for whatever reason, have been separated from their birth parents.
Yes.
And they are in some sort of foster care. So does that mean it's usually, is the guardian usually the state at that point,
yes.
then? Okay. All right. Is it the county in the state or just the state in general? I never really understood
They're
that.
Usually broken down on like county levels. Like you might say like a child is in Blank County's
right.
custody.
Fulton or DeKalb or something like
that.
But
it's still kind of a statewide thing, but just to
okay.
narrow it down, we might go by county.
All right. And so what I wanted to do, and either one of you, and what I want to do with you, Vinny, and you, Todd, is to get into the specifics a little bit of what the experience has been like for you. But I did want to start with, because I know you've chosen Families First, mm-hmm. and I was wondering, how is it that you came about that decision? Either one of you can respond.
Well, I think actually it was almost like Families First chose us because originally we saw the Wendy's Wonderful Kid, no, sorry, the Wednesday's Child, which is through the Department of Family and Children Services, and they have a website called It's My Turn Now Georgia. And so for a long time, I would just kind of, that was the only adoption website I knew of. So I would just kind of go on there and browse and look, and I would see the kids that were in need. But we had not really taken any steps towards actually, moving into this process. And so the first step was just to request some information from Families First. So I did that through the website, and I got a packet of information. The next step was, I think, to schedule an orientation or to attend an orientation. And there was a representative from Families First that was at the orientation giving information. So I didn't really do a lot of searching for a particular agency. They work very closely with Department of Family and Children Services, and they were right there. So that was kind of, it was a very easy decision. I really wasn't even taking into consideration that there are other faith-based agencies that might, discriminate against us or not, because this is a... I believe a state-funded agency.
I'm sure they get state funding.
And therefore, would not be able to discriminate anyway. So I think that there honestly was not a lot of thought in choosing our agency.
Mm-hmm. Well, as it turns out, and you can speak to this, Jaylen, but I think First Families is kind of the only game in town when it comes to a gay couple trying to adopt. Most of the other agencies out there are faith-based. And are you going to correct me?
Well, I can't really confirm what the other agencies are doing. All
yeah.
I can say is Families First is definitely accepting to all families and whatever that looks like.
So you must have a pretty tight relationship with DFACS then, I guess.
We have to. Because
okay.
we're looking for families for their children. So we have to, you know, work really closely.
Are there other agencies that work with DFACS as well, or you don't know?
There are.
Okay. But you, I think you guys are the main players. And at least, I don't know if it's on your website, but you do seem to be known throughout the community, the gay community, as being queer friendly. So.
Well, we like that that's well known.
All right. Okay. So, and this is another interesting stat. And then we'll probably move in towards a break here in a second. But tell me what you found out about in for families first, what the stats were.
So over the last 12 months, Families First has helped to finalize 22 adoptions, and out of those, right around half of those are from queer couples.
I mean, that's pretty amazing. That really is impressive to me. So that makes me feel good. I'm excited about that. So I'm just going to ask a couple of more questions. So Todd, does that mean you were the first one to really go searching?
That's exactly what that means.
Yeah, there's no denying that.
Vinny might have needed a little bit more convincing.
When was that?
3.5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably, we went to our first orientation, no, our first information session called Impact Training, June of 2015. So we probably did orientation a few months prior to that.
All right.
And I am probably safe to say that Vinny was not even fully on board at that point.
Right.
So we can get to a little bit of that later on. But
oh, yeah. He's on board now.
I also want to say that we have, in this process, we have been involved with what one may consider a faith-based agency as well, just for some support services and that sort of thing, and have not experienced discrimination from them. And I won't name them, but and that's just one faith-based agency. I don't know how many there are out there, but I can say that they're not all discriminatory, because we have not had any negative experiences in our, in our interactions with them.
Okay, cool. That's awesome. So for those of you just tuning in, this is WRFG Atlanta, and you are listening to Alternative Perspectives. Atlanta's only queer radio hour. And we are speaking with Vinny Scriba and Todd Smith, and who are in the process of adopting a child, and an adoption coordinator, Jalen Bowen. So we're talking about gay adoptions, and we will be right back in one moment.
Yes, I'll be whatever that you tell me when you're ready. Yes, I'll be your girl, forever your lady. You ain't never got a word, I'm down for you, baby. Best believe that, when you need that, I'll provide that, you will always have it. I'll be on deck, keep it in check. When you need that, I'ma let you have it. Beats in the drum like dum diddy day. I like the dirty rhythm you play. I wanna hear you calling my name like, hey, mama. Banging the drum like dum diddy day. I know you want it in the worst way. I wanna hear you calling my name like, hey mama, mama, hey mama, mama.
All right, and we are back. So that song is Hey Mama. And there is a child out there that likes that song, which is why we played it. Otherwise, I never would have played such a song on the air. But there's a certain child out there, so that's for you. All right, so we are back. For those of you that are just joining, this is WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM. And you're listening to Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting the queer community. So we're speaking with Vinny Scriba and Todd Smith, who are in the process of adopting. And so I wanted to talk a little bit more about, so let me get this right. So you had this idea first, Todd, and you started searching on your own. Was this even before you said anything to Vinny?
No, I think...
I guess it was kind of his business.
It definitely was kind of his business. I think from an individual perspective, it was just kind of always a plan for me. And then when Vinny and I first started getting serious in, you know, in a relationship, we talked
about... A couple of weeks
about,
ago, right? Was yeah, that a couple weeks of weeks ago? No, yeah. 15 years ago.
probably 14, 13 years ago, something like that. Yeah. We started talking about, you know, we're getting serious. How do you feel about having a family? Is that something you want? And at that time, it was something that we both wanted. Cut to 10 years later, we've not done anything about that, and now we're getting a little bit older. So Vinny, I think, was a little more cautious about it. I was still, you know, 100% on board and moving forward as fast as possible, but Vinny, I think, was a little more apprehensive at that point because neither of us wanted to be, like, you know, the grandfather at the kid's high school graduation, right? So I think we were probably in our mid-40s at that point and just kind of decided that if we don't do something in the next year, then it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. I'm ready to hear what your experience has been like.
And there was a period of time where I didn't know that Todd was really going to push for it, right? So there was a period where I was like, yeah, this sounds great, but I'll let you kind of take the lead on making that happen, and didn't really expect him to make it happen.
Not supposed to actually follow through.
But I really appreciate the fact that he did it at this point. So.
Yeah, so you were looking, and then you went to your first orientation in 2018?
15.
2015, so it's really been that long.
It has, yeah.
Okay, so I think... help me to understand, Jalen, like, just lay out for the listeners, like, what is the process? So I guess going to an orientation is a nice starting point, but go ahead.
I'll be listening closely. I'm going to try to keep this concise.
All right. So, we got time. It's okay.
So, yes, you're right. The orientation would be your first step. Typically, after orientation, you would be emailed a very large packet to fill out, and that just... In addition to the application and everything that's in the packet, we'll request documentation such as birth certificates, medical information, just to make sure everything is okay. Then we would have you... Oh,
hold
go
on.
Ahead.
How was filling out that application?
It was lots of fun.
There's still a lot of trees.
How long did that take?
I don't remember how long it took, but I remember... I mean, there's a lot that you divulge. There's a lot of background checks. There's a lot of financial, you know.
Any blood work, stool sample, anything like that?
Yeah, there's the drug testing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't recall a stool sample.
Jalen, you should add that in.
Okay, I'll make notes.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, but then we would have our families register for IMPACT, which is what Todd mentioned earlier. So IMPACT is basically, it's a 24-hour course, not all in one day, spread out. But it's 24 hours to teach, you know, families about trauma and parenting, kind of trying to give them just a real life, like a realistic scope of what our kids are dealing with in care. Then we also ask for things like CPR. Then you would be assigned a home study writer. The home study takes place over 3 visits, and the home study is where, and like... They dive into your business. They really need to figure out what's going on. There's no other way for me to put that.
All right.
It is a little invasive, but, you know, we're...
They pop in for visits unannounced?
No, they're planned.
Okay. How long are they there for?
It really depends on, you know, the writer, the family, and what needs to be discussed, if there's any concerns, if things are going smoothly. But they dive deep in those visits because they really want to get an understanding of, you know, who you truly are and what is your family, you know.
Oh, what the family dynamic is in the household.
Yeah, the family dynamic, the family's support system, things like that. We really want to get just the in-depth scope of what, you know, what your family is really like.
Mm-hmm.
So then that takes about 6 to 8 weeks. Then you would go through your approval process. After approval, we begin matching, which I always need to point out is the longest part. Matching is us literally trying to find your match, like to find the children a home.
Right, right.
I don't know if this is correct. I always look at it as applying for children, because even if your family is great, the state is always going to look for the best match for that child. So it's not necessarily anything personal if you get turned down, but they're always going to look for the best possible fit for the child.
So are you telling me that the ultimate decision, and I guess it would make sense, if you're going for a child that is a child that's in custody of the county or the state, that they ultimately decide?
I would say it's a mutual selection.
Okay, but you're working with somebody in defects, then, is what you're saying.
Depending, we work with several people. Okay. Because this child might have this case manager, right. This one has that one.
But you're working with the case manager.
Right. So say if the case manager selects the family, then the family still has to select the child when they find out more information.
All right. So who selects first then, I guess? Because you have you have to approve. The caseworker has to approve. The family has to approve. You mean the new family or the... Well, I guess, what about the existing family? Do they have anything? Well, like the old family?
At this point, the rights would have been terminated.
Okay. All right. So who goes last then?
I would say the adoptive family makes the fine... I wouldn't even say that. So let's just say this. DFACS will make the Division of Family and Children Services. Mm-hmm. Sorry for my acronyms.
No problem. That's
DFACS great. DFACS will make the first decision saying, yes, this family may be a match. Then we bring some information to this family, mm-hmm. and they'll have to say, okay, let's make this work. And then we monitor that for about 6 months. And then if there's no hiccups if there are hiccups that can be, fixed, and that's fine. But there's no major issues. Everything seems to be going smoothly. That's when we'll move towards finalization after that 6 months of monitoring the child in the home.
Oh, so, well, okay. So
I
we need
like to skip something.
Yeah, we need to slow down a minute. And why don't you, Vinny, why don't you take it up from the beginning? So how did this work for you?
So I would say, in addition, that home study is really critical. And all the paperwork, while it is a lot of work, is really important because you're putting into that, really what your tolerance level is for certain disabilities, for certain behaviors, sibling groups, or single child only. So they really, you have to be very open and honest with that. And that's the best way to do it, I think, as you're going through the home studying, the interview process, is just to be as honest as possible. Because at the end of the day, that information that you provide is given to the child's caseworkers, and they look to say, okay, here's a family that says they can't deal with X, Y, and Z, so therefore I know I need to move on because the child I work with has X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. Or they can say, hey, this family looks like they might be a fit for the child I have based on what they're telling you. So that's really kind of, I think, a big part of that matching process is looking at that home study.
One thing I realize that we should say is, remember the three categories of adoption that you have. One of them is international, one of them is domestic infants.
Yes.
We're not really talking about those two anymore. Right now we're talking more about the third category. Or is the same thing happen for domestic infants?
Some of the same things do apply. Like, okay. I would say everything applies until we get to... We would still have to do the home study. Impact is not required, but it's always an option, that training course. Because, even if you adopt an infant, there are still things that will come out. Because,
right.
Every child has something else going on. And then the home study process. That is all the same. There are some differences, but those key things are the same across the board.
So you were making that point, but then I was just curious to find out, because I know that you had... Some time went by, in the process of choosing the right match, I guess. So I just wondered how that was for you, how that worked.
Yeah. So, I think, Todd would be looking on some of these websites, and it's, it is interesting, but it's the technology helps. It's sad that you can go to a website and look at kids that are available, right? It's a benefit that you can do it. It's a sad situation that you have to do it.
Yeah.
But Todd would spend time looking at these websites, and I would start looking with him, and we'd start to talk to say, hey, based on the description of a child, is this somebody we'd be maybe interested in throwing our hat in the ring for? And the way that would work is you would basically just hit a kind of like an I'm interested submittal, if that's right, Todd. And from there, it would send, once you've had your home study done, I think you had to have your home study done in order to do that on a lot of these websites like Wednesday's Child and It's My Turn Now and those services that actually, give you a description of the children that are available. Once you do that, then it... your home study starts to be viewed, and then you can have the connection start to be made. But again, it would be the child's caseworker, I think, that's selected.
Okay, so, and this is another distinction that I want to make, which kind of confused me, but families first, in your particular instance, they're the adoption agency, But they are not necessarily the one that's providing the child directly. You're going through other entities to find the child, and then you let them know. You let Families First know. Is that right, Jaylene, or is that unusual?
I wouldn't say it's unusual, because a lot of the time, say he saw a child on that website. Mm-hmm. The same way you can inquire online, you can also inquire with your adoption coordinator, which is what I recommend my families do, because typically it's a little bit quicker, because since we do partner with the agencies, they'll just email me back and say, this is the case manager, and we'll direct it that way. But there are people who do their own work.
So
I wouldn't say that looking on your own is not unusual, or inquiring on your own is not unusual.
Okay, so you decided to inquire on your own, but in other cases, you're providing a list of potential matches that you've done your work.
It happens a lot of ways, actually. Uh-huh. There are children on the website, and we can get, you know, they can say, oh, this child, I'm interested in them. Or I could go to the website and make a list like this, and this child might work for this family. We also do things like match meetings, like we had one recently where we went and we spoke to the case managers, because every child that's available for adoption isn't on the site. So we can make those connections that way, or just by knowing people in different counties. They may just give me a call and say, hey, I saw your family on the list. We do send out lists of all of our available families. I saw your family on the list. I'm interested in knowing more about them. So there's a lot of different ways that we can match.
Are these lists the DFACS County's lists, or is this a Families First list you're referring to?
The list that I'm referring to is the Families First list of waiting families. And we send that list out to all of the counties, as well as anybody else who may be working to match children.
Okay. But so that's your list, but then you could go to any other number of websites and find other children as well.
That's right.
Well, there's another distinction too. So when you decide that you want to adopt from foster care like we did, you can decide to adopt from foster care in Georgia only, or you can open it up to sort of a national search. There is a cost difference in your home study. If you stay in Georgia, the cost is very nominal.
Okay. No costs, yeah.
Right.
All right.
Very nominal. I think a $250 application fee that is non-refundable. But I think, and Jay Lynn can confirm, but I think that's pretty close to, you know, out-of-pocket expense. Out of state is a little more expensive, but we wanted to have as many possibilities for a match as possible. And that's where sort of self-advocating comes in, because the priority for in-state caseworkers or case managers would be to place their children in the Georgia foster care system in homes as quickly as possible, provided you find a good match. By opening it up to out-of-state adoptions, I was able to go to a website called AdoptUSKids.org. I can actually build a family profile there. So I'm now opening my family up to a national search for case managers to find us as well. And like Vinny said, the child that we ended up being matched with, we found on AdoptUSKids.org and submitted an inquiry. And then you respond, their case manager will either respond to you, or you can refer them to your case manager here in Georgia. And we probably submitted 20 to 30 inquiries, and all but one, I think we were, no, I'll say all but maybe five, we were rejected for various reasons, because they don't disclose any medical information. They just say this child is not a match based on the choices that you've given us. There were a few. So then, you know, to kind of make a long story short, we connected our case manager with his case manager, and that kind of got the ball rolling. They submitted our home study. Our case manager submitted our home study. And then we didn't hear anything for probably a few months. And then we got a call saying, hey, would you be willing to travel out of state for visitation? Would you be willing to participate in a long visitation period prior to a placement? And we agreed to both of those things. Probably a month after that, we got another call saying, hey, you're still being considered for this child. Are you still interested? And we said yes. And then Vinny, I think this is kind of an interesting part of the story. Vinny may want to pick up the story here.
No, that's all right.
No,
he doesn't know where this is going. I guess it's not that interesting.
So, we were then told that we were in the final sort of selection period for this child. And there was a long conference call with all the case managers on a call, and they were trying to decide which family to choose. And later that night, we actually had a home study update appointment with our case manager. So he came to our house, and he said, congratulations, guys. You know, you've been matched. And we kind of assumed that we were, you know, from that conference call, it meant that we were down to like one out of five families. We were going to be chosen, you know, that is still kind of in the running. And you know, we were just like, oh, okay, yeah, thanks. That's, you know, it's really cool.
We had a very, you know, unenergetic response.
Right.
To that. Oh, so, did that cause the caseworker concern?
Yeah, it did a little. And so later in the evening, he goes, hey, I just want to reiterate, you know, congratulations. And Vinny asked him, he says, well, he said, what does this really mean? And he goes, you've been chosen as the family for this child. And we both just kind of sat there stunned. And I don't think I said anything for the rest of the night.
He didn't.
And then Vinny said, you know, you seem really quiet. You don't seem very excited about this. And I just said, I'm in shock.
Well, again, this is after a three-year process, right? So then you just get that word that says, hey, you've been matched. And there's no guarantee that it's going to work out from that point. But, I mean, that's a critical step in the process, is to have a caseworker of a child select you. You know?
Oh, yeah, that's a big deal. Yeah, you should be, like, jumping up and down or something.
And we weren't. We just didn't understand.
But like Jalen said, there are lots of ways these matches happen.
All right.
You know, self-advocate. You do whatever you can to push it forward. So.
But it's going to take a while.
It is going to take a while.
Yeah, it's going to take a while.
Just like she said.
Well, that's a long hour experience, too.
What is the... Can you give an average? I know you're going to say you can't.
I can give an average.
Oh, good.
So typically, let's say after your home study is completed and approved, it would take an average, once again, of 9 to 18 months. Some people it's longer. Some people... And by months, I mean as far as getting a placement. Some people are longer. Some people I've seen get approved and have placements in 2 months. Some people don't have placement until 3 years.
An out-of-state is probably going to take a little bit longer, I would imagine. So
yes.
I did want to ask you, and then we're going to finish up with some fun stuff. Jalen, so this idea, because I was really impressed. I mean, Vinny and Todd are friends of mine, I should let you know, and let the listeners know. But... I was really impressed with, you know, there were multiple visits where you went up to the state where the child was, and then there was a couple of visits where the child came down to you. So the transition was very slow, very deliberate, and it wasn't like a jump, you know. It made it much smoother for everybody. And I was wondering, is that something that is required? Is that something that's asked for? In general, what do you think?
Well, as far as visitation process, that can vary as well. But for standard, it typically takes, in-state I'm talking about, it typically takes about 6 weeks. But it does depend on the needs of the child. Like if we see the child needs some more adjustment time, or say like at the 6-week point, there might be like 3 or 4 more weeks until school is out. We are probably going to wait until that break. Or
but
we may wait until that break, just depending on what's best for the child and the family.
What I'm saying, is there like a standard number of visits that you want before you actually put a child in the home?
Right around 6 weeks. So that should be like, first visit would be a day visit. You meet for a couple of hours. Next week, maybe all day. Move into weekend visits.
Gotcha.
And then it's a transition process. So
okay.
Day visits, weekends.
Okay. All right.
Placement.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We've just got a few minutes left. It's amazing how quickly the time goes. This is WRFG 89.3 FM. You're listening to Alternative Perspectives, and we are speaking with Vinny Scriba and Todd Smith, and they are in the middle of an adoption, or close to the end of the process, I think. So I wanted to ask you guys a couple of more, I guess, personal questions. So I wanted two things. Well, you know what? We'll just ask this one thing. All right. So how has being a parent changed your lives individually? That's a big question, but what has changed?
Well, I think a lot of your focus changes, right, on the things that you're used to focusing on no longer become the high priority for mm-hmm. you. So, you know, you have to really kind of brush up on your ability to juggle a lot of things. So maintaining careers, right, becomes a little bit challenging, right, because now you have some another aspect of your life that's, you know, taken priority.
Right.
So shifting gears a little bit, you know, moving things around the house, getting prepared for a kid to be in the house, you know, things like that, just kind of minor adjustments. You know, I think, you know, we don't see our friends, as you know, as often mm-hmm. anymore, you know, but we still maintain our relationships with our friends, and that's important to us. But I think, you know, for me individually, you know, I think it's just the challenge of really sort of balancing all your priorities. And I think that would be true of any new parent.
Yeah, that's what I was, as I'm listening, I'm thinking, well, gosh, I mean, this is not something amazing. This is what every new parent
exactly.
goes through.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about it is that this is something that not only you've made a conscious decision to do, but this is something that you are being required to jump through a number of hoops in order to make it happen, with people helping you along the way. You get, you know, there's possibility of training, there's other services. And I guess my point is, I could make the argument, and I will, I would say, as a generality, a queer couple that has decided to have a child is probably going to be, there's probably a better chance that they're going to be a more conscientious parent than somebody who just gets pregnant sometime.
Well, you know? I would open that up potentially to any couple or any,
yes.
any individual regardless yeah. of orientation.
Anybody who decides
right.
to
I mean,
adopt.
You're really,
you're completely right about that. And then the last thing is, I just want to know, give me in each of you, and I'll start with you, Todd, something that surprised you when you thought about, like, if you were imagining what it would be like to be a parent versus the reality of it. Like, what has this surprised you? What have you been like, wow, I didn't know I was going to feel this way, or I didn't know I was going to have to deal with this? Or tell me something that surprised you.
Well, I think Vinny and I were actually talking about this on the way down, but it's kind of remarkable to me how quickly you become attached to a child who you didn't know, you know, 6 months ago. Our child has been with us now since December, and in only 4 to 5 months, we feel like a family. We love him as much as we could love a biological child. And so I think that, you know, how quickly you form those familial relationships was pretty surprising to me. I mean, there are other things like how easy did I think it was going to be, and how hard did I think it was going to be? I mean, there are moments when it's much easier than I imagined, and there are moments that, you know, I didn't think I was going to be able to get through the day. So, you know, but we knew it wasn't going to be easy. But I think that the most surprising thing is how quickly you attach and how quickly you're willing to sacrifice your needs for his needs.
For someone else's. Yeah. And what about you, Vinny? Anything you want to add?
No, I mean, I would agree with that. I mean, you do really feel that connection. And, you know, one thing we talk about often is you feel that connection, but you still, there's a long, depending on the child's age, you know, there could be years of that child's history that you don't know, right? We still know just that snapshot of a few months that we've had him. So it's that constant still learning the mm-hmm. child, right? That I think, you know, will be a constant evolution. I'll tell you one thing is, you know, we've met a lot of folks that are going through the same thing we're doing. We've developed a really nice support system and we were kind of anticipating leaning on our existing support system, which we do, but we really have, through networking and support groups, met a lot of folks that are going through the same process. So that's been a real help for us, and not necessarily a surprise, but, you know, just a nice to have.
Well, I know that you love this child because
oh, yeah.
I've seen both of you in tears over it. And then when I have seen you at a social event, it's all about the child, just like any other parent. thank you so much, Vinny and Todd, for joining us. Jay Lynn, if people want to find out more information and perhaps go to an orientation, can you go ahead and give us the website?
Yes, sir. Our website is familiesfirst.org, very simple. So that'll have all of our information if you want to attend an orientation. and find out more about us.
All right. That's great. And that will do it for Alternative Perspectives. Thank you so much. I appreciate you for listening. I was gone, but now I am back. I'll be back for, I think, 3 more weeks. You'll be getting to listen to my voice here. And next up, we have What the Folk. I got it right. What the Folk. Okay, that's good. Thank you so much for listening to Alternative Perspectives. And please do me a favor and go out and tell a child that you love them. Now, don't make it a stranger, because that may be an issue, but call up a child next time you see your cousin or your daughter or your son or whoever. Tell them that you love them. It'll make them feel good. Maybe they'll tell you back. Catch you later.